Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Discovering Buddhism and the Spiritual Teacher module. Is there anyone here tonight who wasn't here last week for the first one? Okay, we have several of you. Good. Yes.
I was one of the millions.
Yeah. Well, be sure and pick up one of the handouts that are on this table over beside the pews. And we do have the completion card now is over there in case you didn't get it last week and you're going for the Discovering Buddhism certificate. Be sure you pick one up. We will have a discussion group afterwards if you want to stick around and talk about some of the ideas that are presented here. And it's not required, but it's not going to be, I'm not going to be directing it. I'll be hanging out with you, but if you want to do it, stick around. No, I know we keep offering cake. No cake this week. I'm sorry. That worked, too. We had a good turnout. Yeah. I think that's all I have. Is there anyone here who is here for the very first time in Discovering Buddhism or even at the center? Okay.
Okay, now it's on. So welcome back, or welcome. My name is Stephanie, or Steep, whichever you'd prefer. My nickname at Geshe-la gave me a Steep. I have a lot of Geshe-la stories because, for some of you may not know, that he lived in my house for 9 years when he first came to this country, and I taught him how to drive and how to type, how to understand what some of the words meant. That was fun. So I have a lot of, and I was a very stubborn student. Once I finally things kind of, I would ask just 3 million questions. He'd get so sick of those questions, but it was like once I finally got something, then it didn't leave. It just took a long time. So because of that, I have great appreciation for when people struggle with some of the material. I'm always amazed when people are like, "Oh yeah, it makes sense." I'm like, "Really?" It didn't for a long time. So I try to pass on the things that I was struggling with and what helped me. So we're going to start every session. I mean, in Buddhism, you typically try to start start your day and you try to start your practice with the same practice of setting your intention. Because just like if you were going to the gym and you had some goal, you wanted to, I don't know, build some muscle or stretch something or lose some weight or whatever it was, you would have those goals and you'd probably review them before your session. They would probably help you in the gym to kind of get your motivation going. You're going to be watching some game and working out. So something like that, that's the exact same idea here. It's not something kind of mystical. It's very practical. So, and also we have a whole day's worth of Monday on our back that it's nice to kind of let go of. So get into a meditative posture. If you're sitting in the chair, just make sure your feet are flat on the floor. And then again, I'll just quickly review the meditation posture. You know, left hand below your navel, right hand gently on top of it like this. Your thumbs just lightly together, forming an oval right below your navel. Arms out away from your sides so that it doesn't impede your breathing. The most important part is that your spine is aligned like coins stacked together. And we tend to, when we try to sit up straight, we tend to arch our lower back thinking that well, now we're straight, but it's very hard for us to maintain that. So especially if you're on the floor, but even at home on the chair, have a pillow that pushes you a little bit up and forward so that your knees are a little bit lower than your hips, and this will help you find that balance with your spine. So again, you don't want to overarch any part of it. You just want to have it balanced on top of each vertebrae on top of each other. Tuck your chin a little bit so that the top of your spine is also not broken if you're lifting your chin up and your neck is bent. And close your eyes. You can leave them a little bit open if you'd like to bring in some light and keep you alert. Put your tongue on the back of your teeth. so your jaw is relaxed. And then you bring all your attention and focus to your breathing. And I'm going to give you about 5 minutes just to count your breath. So one inhale, exhale is one. The next inhale, exhale cycle is two. And you can count to five or you can count to ten. The number is not important. What's important is that you're tying your awareness to the count over and over again, because your mind is going to want to wander. And then, as though you're bringing back a very beloved child, you just notice that your mind has wandered and bring it back to the count, so that it can take a break from all of its hyperactivity. You'll notice the thoughts rising up. If you're able to notice them rising up like a wave, then you shine the light of your awareness on that and say, oh, this is a thought arising. You'll notice it tends to dissipate quicker. You can rest in the space between the thoughts. So if I take about 5 minutes to just count your breaths. And take a minute to review your personal reason, personal intention for coming. Think about something in your mind that you would like to change. Some quality you're hoping to stretch, your patience, generosity, wisdom, and what it would be like if you could do that. What it will be like when you accomplish that goal. How you will feel, how you relate to others with this change. And take a minute to really contemplate how very possible this is, how your mind is capable of incredible, incredible things. And make a very strong wish to accomplish this. And then I'm going to read, and you're welcome to read with me, the Refuge Prayer on page 34. It's really meant, you can sit in meditation and listen to me read it. It's really meant to increase our intention setting, our motivation. And some of you took refuge recently with Geshe-la. And so this will be particularly meaningful. And refuge is really considered the gateway to all the goals that you want, to enlightenment itself. So reviewing refuge regularly is hugely beneficial. So again, you're welcome to just listen while I repeat it three times and meditate on it. Or you're welcome to join me. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Okay, thanks. We're going to be talking about that and how that relates to the spiritual teacher off and on today. For those of you who weren't here, the rest of the people around you had homework. And I asked everybody to practice viewing everyone as your mother, because as I said last week, Geshe-la said that this practice of viewing the spiritual teacher is very, very difficult. And he said people think it's easy, you know, they just got to find somebody and lean on that person and it's all done. And instead, if they only knew how difficult it was and how much of a practice it is for our own mind, they'd have a different feeling about it. And so, you know, I remember him saying, you know, if people can practice seeing all beings as their mothers, then, you know, they're halfway there. That alone is really, really difficult. So I said to everybody to try throughout the week to do that at different times. How'd that go? Anybody remember? Anybody do it? Yeah?
No, oh. I'll start.
Okay, great.
I decided to concentrate that my practice of doing that when I was driving. Partly it was, my mom was a really bad driver.
So
that helped in a way. But when people would be passing me, cutting in, I just kept saying,
mm-hmm.
My mother. There goes my mother. There's my mother. And it certainly quieted my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't easy, and I didn't remember all the time, believe
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good time for me personally to practice it, because I tend to be very impatient mm-hmm. when I drive.
Okay. I like it. Anybody else? So, Joanna, did these people know you were doing this practice?
No. No.
You didn't shout out the window, "Hey, Mom!
Mom, hey, how you doing?" No.
It was very personal.
Yeah.
And it changes the way you were seeing the drivers.
It did, and I was also much kinder to them.
Mm-hmm.
And not just less impatient, mm-hmm. but kinder and letting people in and
mm-hmm.
like that.
I'd really encourage y'all to try it. You know, it's certainly there's going to be no bad side effects from it. And nobody has to know. That's the same thing with the practice of the spiritual teacher, except the teacher would know. But it's not something you go around advertising to people. It's not something that 10 other people have to do exactly like you. It's something that you choose. It's very personal, and the beneficiary is you. Now, in Joanna's instance, and with that practice, the beneficiary is everybody else on the road, too. And the same could be said for this, ultimately. But the practice is really your view. Your view. And if people struggle with doing this practice of viewing all beings as their mothers, first they really try to logically convince themselves why that's so. So it's not just to do it because I asked you to do it, but you know, why is that important? Why is that so? How can I imagine that all beings are my mothers? And you'd go back through some of the other earlier DB modules to convince yourself of that, and then give it a try, and then compare notes and bring in notes from the field. Because again, that's perfect practice for what we're talking about. I want to review a little bit about what we were saying are some of the preliminary qualifications of a student from the student side. Does that ring a bell? Okay. So there were some that we talked about last week, like recognizing your own suffering. And the first noble truth, and how important that is for us to recognize that, you know, we're not in a pure land. And so it could be sometimes when you hear your own suffering, it sounds so heavy duty. So you can reframe that as, you know, to just realizing that this is not paradise. So that it doesn't have to be, you know, this intense suffering, but it could be, you know, the suffering of driving in traffic. It could be the suffering of, you know, how it's so incredibly hot outside. I had to wear this really cool shirt, and now all of a sudden I'm a little chilly. That kind of thing. There's nothing reliable in this world that can help me label it paradise. So then another preliminary is renunciation of suffering. Remember, you're making a strong wish to get out of prison, basically. You're trying to generate that wish that, oh yeah, this isn't paradise, and yeah, it would be nice to be in paradise. It would be nice to get away from this and get into some better state of mind where I don't have all these things that are agitating me. Then refuge in the three jewels. And so the three jewels are the Buddha, the Dharma, and what's called the Sangha or the Supreme Assembly, people who are on that path ahead of you. And taking refuge in that, which we'll go over again, but it's where you're saying, this is what's going to help me. You know, it's again a view. It's not something somebody else is doing for you, or the little insurance card you're going to pull out of your wallet and get something. It's where you are taking comfort. And then knowledge of what to practice and what to avoid. So what things are you trying to cultivate and what things are you trying to abandon? You know, again, we're talking about our actions of body, speech, and mind there. And then the beginnings of bodhicitta, and that would be the beginnings of aspiring for bodhicitta, the beginnings of understanding what bodhicitta means. Because otherwise, if you don't have these kind of preliminaries, you could pick the wrong person. That's what they're saying. You know, it's like you have to have some kind of grounding. And DB class is a perfect place to get that grounding of, what are we talking about here? You know, here's a good place to come and chat and figure it out and have that kind of a solid grounding. I want to mention a few others because they're based in the texts, and good for me to be a little more organized. Where did I? I wrote them on the board here, but I also want to give you the people who said each one. I'm going to have to come back to telling who it was when I find that page. But so the first three are open-mindedness, common sense. You know, basically, you're talking about street smart, so you would know and have confidence in your own intelligence, that kind of street smart, a strong interest in Dharma. Those are just kind of three preliminaries. And then in another text, they added on to this by saying a respect and appreciation for Dharma and an attentive mind. And then another teacher added on to that by saying you also, it's important for the student to have good character and a kind and a compassionate heart. So those are the side, those are the preliminaries from the student side. And you know, if you're asking a, okay, now I can tell you who said these things. So the first one, well, sorry. I've got so many notes here. Oh, here we go. Okay. Aryadeva, who's an Indian pandit, composed a number of texts, and those are the first three are from his text. The second two are from Chandrakirti, the great saint and propounder of the Middle Way teachings. So he had a commentary on the original text. And in addition to respect for Dharma, it's also for qualified teachers. And appreciation and respect for Dharma and for qualified teachers. And the second one was an attentive mind. And the third one is Geshe Potawa, who is a Kadampa Geshe in Tibet. And he said, more important than intelligence, a disciple needs good character and a kind heart. And so we haven't even started unless we have these things. And, you know, you can ask a teacher all you want. The teacher also has to accept your request. And so the teacher would be looking at your qualifications. We've talked about what you would be looking at from the teacher's side, and I listed all the qualifications of the teacher as well and told you where to find them in the texts. But also the teacher would be looking at your side, because the teacher's then making a commitment to you, you know, that, and you'd also be making a commitment to this teacher. Now people asked, I want to get back to a couple questions people asked me last week so I don't forget that. Somebody, I don't know if you're still here, raise your hand. You're asking, what if you, you know, things kind of change, the teacher changes, you change, and you don't want to any longer have that teacher. Is that person here? Oh, well. If you're here, I have the answer. I mean, I want to be real clear about this, and we're going to keep covering this issue the whole time. It's different than other teachers that we've had in our lives, right? And it's different because we're now looking at a much bigger picture. We're looking at this karmic picture of lifetime after lifetime after lifetime that you continue to have relationships with people. So you can definitely back away from a teacher without breaking your commitments, without breaking those vows. And we'll talk about how exactly to do that. What you want to be able to preserve for yourself is your view. This is all about your view. And we're going to keep going into this about why that's so important. So, if first of all, almost every teacher that you will find has multiple teachers. So teachers go, you know, you'll read about some very famous teachers who went all the way to Indonesia in a boat for 15 years to get there to get this teaching. And they study with this teacher. And then they basically, in some ways, surpass this teacher. It doesn't mean that they stop relating to this person in this way that we're describing. It means, though, that they now, because of their intelligence and their understanding, feel like, oh, now I need to go get some other teachings. Just like, you know, you don't stop respecting your high school teachers just because you went to college. It's the same thing. So then the student may need to go and find another teacher. And last week we also talked about the different kinds of teachers, and that the root teacher is considered the one that really has moved and touched and changed your entire life. The other teachers are still guiding you and giving you information and helping change your life, but the root teacher there's this very special relationship with. And one time when I brought Geshe-la years ago to New Orleans, where I'm from, he came to do a teaching there, and I wanted him to come to my high school because my high school is wild. And I wanted him to meet one of the teachers there who really saved me, because I was a mess, and well, I won't go down that story, but it was this teacher, he really took me under his wing. He tried to calm me down, got me to write poetry. He wrote poetry. I mean, he was just a wonderful person. I'm still in touch with him to this day. So I went to Geshe-la to meet him, and I was describing all of him as we were walking to the school, and he goes, oh, like, that's like your root teacher. And it's different. I mean, he doesn't know Buddhism, but he was making that analogy, like, of all the teachers I've had in my education from nursery school on up to grad school, this would be considered my root teacher. And I have that kind of respect for him. I bring him presents. I see him all the time. Doesn't matter whether he communicates with me or not. That connection is never broken. He can go years without communicating with me, but that won't be broken. So if he did do something that changed my view of him, then what I would try to do is maybe just back away a little bit, but not change my respect for what he has given me. So we will talk about that, and if you have some specific scenarios and questions, then please let me know. Another question, I think, Susan, you asked about, can you have a teacher who has died? So if you have a teacher in this lifetime who's alive and then they've died, you continue to have a connection with that teacher, and you will probably find that teacher in future lives. So it's important to hold that view that you have of them. But in picking somebody, you wouldn't necessarily pick somebody in the way that we're talking about who has already died. You can be certainly motivated and inspired and led in that kind of a way by somebody who has already passed away and whose writings you're reading, but you wouldn't pick them because they wouldn't be able to give you live information. You know, they wouldn't be able to guide you. The other thing I'll say is, because I've known a lot of people who have this idea that, okay, if I pick a teacher and ask this person, they are then going to be like my guitar teacher. I'll see them a couple times a week, and they'll check out how I'm doing, and then they'll give me homework. It's not exactly like that. So it may, but it's not the way that we kind of view it. Like, now they're going to be, it's not the same. So a lot of people here will ask Lama Zopa Rinpoche, whose photograph is up there on the other side, and who's one of the directors of FPMT. They certainly see him in that way, and they may see him once every couple of years, right? Or they may send him an email and get some more guidance on something. But from his side, then, he is always considering them in his prayers, right? And if the person is seeing him as their spiritual teacher, that's huge to be considered in the group of people he might be saying specific prayers for, or they might email him for some new practice. But what the teacher is finding is some practice for you to do, not something that they're going to talk to you about every single day like you would have with your graduate professor or something. So I know in the beginning Geshe used to give me these practices, and I kept thinking in my mind, like, okay, let me hurry up and finish this so that then we can do whatever I thought was really going to happen. And he would tell me, okay, 100,000 of these mantras or something. I'd say, okay. It would take me like half a year, and I'd say, okay, I'm done. Now what? And he's like, okay, 100,000 of those things. And I just thought, you're kidding me. When are we going to get to the real deal here? That was the real deal. That is the real deal. And slowly, because of all of those practices he was making me do, I started to get it. I started to get that what was important was not, you know, my connection to him in this personal way as much as what he was feeding me to change my view in my mind. Make sense? Okay, so I don't know how much I am saying is like really duh, or really like, what is she saying? So you have to like just jump in and tell me and ask me questions. Even for me, I just go back and forth sometimes. On a certain day I'll feel like this, and next day I'll feel like what? So I just throw out a lot of ideas for you to mull over. And I go back a lot with the analogy, or not the analogy, but the story I gave you all last week when we were talking about the view of the teacher, and I mentioned the story in the Bible where someone touches Jesus' robe and they're healed. And Jesus can feel that they've touched his robe, and the man said, "You healed me." And Jesus says, "No, that was your faith." And my point is that those two came together. Both qualities from both sides came together in that perfect connection. So without that man's faith, and after, you know, he had complete faith in Jesus' qualifications, right? He had complete faith in him. So when he touched his robe, he was healed. But without it coming from the other side, it was this two-way street. And that's why the emphasis on all of this is your view. I can't say that enough, that they say a lot in the books that when you have a teacher, when you meet a teacher, it's like water on all the seeds that you've already planted. So everything that you're doing up till that point is not wasted. It's incredibly important. That's why it's called preliminary. It's like getting the field ready. And then, so it's like in this example we're talking about in the Bible, that man's life changed when he had that experience, right? But everything that he'd done up to that point was getting the field ready. And then it's watered. And so that's what the connection is like with the teacher. It's like rain on the field that you've already plowed. And then you're still the one weeding it. I hate to tell you, but you're still the one doing all the rest of the work. But another way I like to think of it is almost like cognitive dissonance. So what do you think of when you hear that term, cognitive dissonance? Anything? What? A disconnect? Yeah? What is it meant? I may have the wrong definition, but what's it meant, this disconnection? What's the power of cognitive dissonance? Has anybody heard anything about it?
You see things different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It shocks you.
This is what I was told in my social work program in grad school 10 years ago, is it, in a positive way, it's that disconnect of where you are and where you want to be can then positively pull you over here. So if you're just kind of, this is cool, I got my setup, and then you see what's possible and where you could be, that has the power of moving you towards it, right? So meditating on enlightenment, meditating on the little meditation I had you do a few minutes ago about what it would be like if you could tame some of these parts of your mind or expand your patience or whatever it is, starts to set in play this cognitive dissonance, which has the power to start pulling you towards your goal. That's the exact same thing with the teacher. So you then are, you're the one responsible for your view, which is why you want to make sure you're picking somebody who can hold that view for you. So you're responsible for finding somebody who can hold that view for you, and then you having that view is going to start pulling you towards becoming that same, having those same qualities. So the way not to get led down and off the cliff, or to make sure that your teacher has the qualifications that we talked about. In addition to that, the vows are meant to keep you from, some people will ask, you know, what if the teacher asks you to do something awful? Because we all know about cults. We all have a lot of stories in our heads about teachers who were completely exploitative and manipulative of students. So the vows are meant to be like guide rails on the highway, right? So you would know if somebody asks you to do something that breaks one of your vows, you can say no. You can say no to a teacher. In fact, the stories of the Buddha's life before he became enlightened, there were times where his teachers asked him to steal. And what he did then in his mind is he understood that this was kind of a challenge of his morality. Were they really asking him to steal, or were they checking out how strong his vows were? Then I was reading about the Dalai Lama, who had two tutors when he was younger. I guess that we call them tutors. They were regents, and they had political positions. This is back in Tibet, and they used to fight with each other politically. So what he said was, when he was on the meditation cushion, he had no problem at all with seeing them in the right way, right? Seeing what they were giving him, seeing all their positive qualities. When he got off the meditation cushion, he had no problem telling them to stop all of this. So he had no problem calling them out on that. And you have to kind of separate these places and these ways of doing things. So if you felt like your teacher was asking you to do something that you, it's a Dharma thing, like that you couldn't do, like, okay, Geshe will ask me to recite this one prayer. It's a very long prayer, 100,000 times. And so it took me half a year to memorize it. And then I timed it, and I thought, I won't, even if I spent the rest of my life doing this, I'll never accomplish that, which kind of blew my mind because I was always used to accomplishing all these things. And I said, I don't think that's possible. I don't think I can do that. So it was okay for me to say, I can't do that. So then he said, okay, at least do one a day. And he said, you know, you can also commit to doing it. Doesn't mean you'll finish it in this lifetime. I said, okay, well, maybe I did half of them last lifetime. He goes, that's true. We'll see. So anyway, you can question. You can say, I don't know that I can do that. As long as you're not saying it out of laziness, and that's where you're checking your mind. And then if it's something, there's the Dharma instructions your teacher's giving you. Then if there's something that you feel like is unethical that your teacher is asking you, you can say no. You can say, you know, I can't do that. Then if you're hearing something about your teacher, so I'm trying to cover all these bases of things people have asked me, like if you hear something about your teacher, what's most important for you then again is that, I wish we had a good example, that you are maintaining your view as much as you possibly can. And this book that I've recommended, Relating to a Spiritual Teacher by Alexander Berzin, which is in the bookshop, has some really good examples. So if that's something that's kind of tripping you up, I would definitely recommend getting it and reading some of the points in here. Okay. Any questions so far? Yes.
Couple of things. One.
Give that man a mic.
Couple of things. One, does a teacher have to be a monk or a nun?
Mm-hmm. No. Technically, no. The qualifications that we went over, it certainly helps, right? But somebody could have disrobed, and people would still ask that person to be their teacher. Absolutely.
The second question is, when's an appropriate time to choose a teacher? Should we wait till this 2-year course is over? I feel I don't want to choose a teacher when I don't know enough.
Right.
I don't want to waste his or her time with stupid questions when I could...
You can waste your time with me with those stupid questions. that's a very good question, and there's no rush. There's no rush because there's still Dharma instructors all around us, right? So just because, you know... there's like 20 things I want to say. Okay, so there's tons of people that we can get information from, and we're so lucky to be in this place where there's all these people who have this information. So you don't have to enter into this formal teacher-student relationship to get all this fed to us. That's really important. And it's really important to check out all the qualifications of a teacher and your feeling about this person and your view of this person so that you don't have any regrets. That you can really do this practice the way it's meant to be. So I would say it's important to have a really solid base before you put anything on top of that. And in the meantime, nothing is lost. It's all perfect. And you know, Geshe-la has said, you know, he's our Dharma friend. He's here to guide us all along the way. One of the distinctions, I'm going to go into this thing in a minute. So I want to hold off on that. There was something else I wanted to say when you were talking about that. It'll come back to me. Any other questions before I... Yeah.
If your teacher is human, you know, that they're doing things that, like, let's say they're messy.
They're messy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking that wouldn't necessarily affect your idea of their knowledge and how they guide you.
Right, shouldn't. Yeah.
If they do something like spit on the sidewalk or something, and you're like,
right. Oh,
you know, they're
right.
People.
Right, yes. They are people in human form, and they're going to, you know, fart and spit and, you know, all kinds of things. So, yeah, it's really important to know, again, that, this is what I wanted to say. I saw a lot of you were here for a refuge ceremony last week, and Geshe-la gave refuge, and then he also gave this mantra for people to learn. It's important if you take refuge, but even if you're not, you can practice with this, because this is absolutely true, is that what he is doing is coming down from this unbroken chain all the way from the historical Buddha. So the words that he taught you in that mantra, the refuge ceremony that he practiced, is coming down from the Buddha to this person, to this person, to this person, all the way down to Geshe Gelug. So that's why you want to make sure, so the person doesn't have to be a monk or nun, but they have to have that. It would be very helpful if they have that, so that then it's so much easier for you to visualize that you're getting this right through that chain, right to you. That's going to have a powerful impact on your mind, rather than if somebody out on the street that you ran into, who you don't know very well, said the same thing to you. I mean, that could be an enlightened being out there on the street. But here, your mind isn't going to be able to doubt and go through all these contortions, because you know that there's this unbroken chain of command, boom, from him to you. So, did I answer the question? What was the question? Was that right? Was it along in the ballpark? Okay. What was your question, Susan? Was that right? Oh, spitting. Right. Okay, right. So that's why I said last week, too, like incense smells better from a distance. So, and Geshe will tell people a lot of times, you know, you don't get too close. You know, it's going to be easier for you if you don't get too close. But then we also do need to practice with, and we have some practice in other areas, how to still maintain that respectful view, even knowing that they're not perfect, you know? Okay, yeah.
I feel like there is so much to everything. There's so much, and that there's so much to learn and to absorb and
yeah.
to become part of my bones. And I want to know, will I intuitively know when it's time to get a teacher?
Well, I don't know if you'll intuitively know. I mean, I would say it should be much more based on sound reason. Like, okay, all of us can understand this analogy. If you're picking a therapist for yourself or for your kids or for your marriage, for somebody you love, you're going to be pretty careful, because we all know stories. So you're going to really check that out. You're going to talk to some people. You're going to make sure their credentials are correct, hopefully. You're going to do your research. So this is like that times 1,000, because this doesn't, there's like no necessary termination. You know, you're imagining this going on lifetime to lifetime, or following from past lifetimes to this lifetime. So it should be done with a lot of care. And you can still practice viewing this person in this way, even without entering into that kind of formal relationship, because we all have a special relationship with Geshe-la just by the fact that we're here in Raleigh and he's here in Raleigh and we're connected to him and he's guiding us and, you know, teaching us mantras directly from that lineage that I mentioned. And the effect that has, like I remember when in the beginning I was trying to convince myself, like, why is that powerful? And then I thought, wait a minute, like people would drive all the way to Washington, D.C. to sit in a chair that, I don't know, somebody else sat in, Lincoln or somebody, and they'll, you know, because it holds some kind of power, right? And that's just kind of a mundane, you know, thing of a president not even that long ago compared to the Buddha. So it's that same thing. We're wanting to kind of get in that same, we want to sit in that chair. But because we want to completely transform our minds. So we want to develop that same kind of zeal that we'll have somebody drive all the way across country to sit in Teddy Roosevelt's chair or Lincoln's chair. It's that same kind of feeling. So first having that passion is really important. But then you want to make sure that's the right chair. Or if somebody just pull out a chair off the street and say, yeah, Lincoln sat on this chair, you know. You got to really make sure, because you don't want to doubt. You want to have confidence. And in a minute I'm going to read the kind of the different ways of getting there. Okay. Yeah.
So like your high school teacher or whatever it was, if you've had a teacher, a spiritual teacher that basically changed your life, I mean really set mm-hmm. you on the course 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but would you, I mean it's not the Dharma way. I mean, would it be ideal? I mean, that person is never going to go away for
right.
me. But I don't know if that's... I mean, this is so rich.
Mm-hmm.
This lineage and this teachings is so rich. So
mm-hmm.
I guess just continue on, and maybe there would be somebody that... I mean, if I continue on, I would meet
mm-hmm.
something and then... add on, or I don't know.
So like the person in the past wasn't from this tradition, but really kind of got you onto the path? Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah, I mean,
and
she's an Indian,
right.
You know, it's Mahatma, you
mm-hmm.
know, saint, still alive, actually,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people now.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
But the teachings here are so rich. I mean,
right.
I almost feel like this is a special thing for me now to dive into this. So
just keep checking it out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no rush. And that's why this module is kind of tricky, because sometimes it comes at the beginning of the whole path, is the foundation of the root of the path, is the relationship with the teacher. But it's also really on another level one of the very hardest practices ever. So it's not something like, okay, I got to do that. We already have all of the most important part before that is really the wisdom teachings, which we are steeped in here, right? So we can pull all of that and watch ourselves slowly change so that it will feel more organic. We won't be done out of like a panicky feeling, like, oh, I got to do that, I got to get that. It shouldn't be out of a panicky feeling. Mm-hmm. It should be much more of an organic development, an evolution. You know, and that everything that leads up to it is very important as well. So, you know, we have teachers everywhere, and we have our own inner teacher, which is the most important one. So I remember I had watched this thing I was telling Geshe-la about. I saw something years ago that was this show kind of like Miracles or Animal Miracle or something. And there was this guy and his father were hunting, and they were out on this lake, this frozen lake, and there was a deer who could not get up. And she had slipped on the ice and she could not get up, and they were like a mile away from shore. And he said he felt so bad for this deer, and there's no way he was going to kill it. And he and his father were trying to figure out how to get it back to land because it wouldn't let them touch it. So they went back and they got this really long kind of like rope or something from their hiking gear, and they wrapped it around the deer so they didn't have to touch her, and then they just pulled her for a mile to shore. And when she got to shore, she, you know, got on land. She was so happy. And then she just stood there and looked at them for the longest time. He said it gave him chills, and he thought, you know, well, maybe she's hurt, and he started to go towards them, and then she ran off. And he said, I'm not going to criticize other people for hunting, he said, but I personally can never hunt again. And when I told Geshe-la that story, he said, like, that deer is his teacher. You know, that deer taught him a huge lesson, right? He said, you never know who that deer is. So Geshe-la could kind of have this view that deer was, you know, the manifestation of something that came in to change that man's life. The fact is, this man's mind changed completely with that experience. So, you know, the things that we learn, the things that open our heart, are all around us all the time. Then at some point, when it feels right, we may make this special connection with a teacher. So let me read this one part, because maybe this is the right time to say this, to read this, if I can find the right page. Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of little good tidbits in here. I've kind of been rereading this. I read it years ago. So there's these different ways of looking at the teacher, and kind of it's from like a Theravadin point of view. You're looking at the teacher as almost like a representative of all the Buddhas, and that's very important. So, you know, even having that view right now would be helpful. You know, looking at teachers as representatives of the Buddhas. That they're looking at their mentors as similar to Buddhas in having developed a Buddha's good qualities. Okay? Oh, let me read this one thing. This one teacher, the Gelug master Yelarong Fultram, explained three progressive levels on which disciples need to see their spiritual mentors as amalgams of the Buddha figures Chenrezig, Manjushri, and Vajrapani. On the first level, their mentor is like them in their good qualities. That's the one I just mentioned. The Theravadin view is that their mentors and their teachers are like them in their good qualities, almost like representatives. On the second level, the Bodhisattva level, their mentors have those qualities. Okay, so they're kind of... they're kind of like vessels for those qualities. They're kind of holding those qualities. And on the third level, the Tantra level, the highest Tantra level, their mentors are those beings. That's the hardest one to achieve. But and that's when they're seeing the teacher as inseparable from the Buddhas. And so it doesn't mean that they're so the bodhisattva level is like their emanations. They're holding all those qualities. They have all those qualities. And the third level, the tantra level, is they are inseparable from those holy beings. And inseparable could mean like this. That the two levels, and this will help with the spitting, okay? That the two things exist at the same time. The regular mundane human being and the holy being. That the inseparable qualities. So, for example, when I lived in this one house, this little wren used to come in our basement and build a nest right on top of the door. She wasn't using or seeing this door as a door. She was using and seeing this as a place for her nest. The rest of us were seeing it as a door. Those two things exist. For the wren, she saw this as a home. And for us, we saw it as a door. They're not wrong. They're just different consciousnesses' view of it, you know, higher and lower consciousness viewing of this thing. Same thing like in New Orleans, we've got lots of cockroaches. And I remember when I was a kid, these little roaches would build nests inside. If you had a clock, they liked the warmth of the gears or something. It was gross. And anyway, they would go in there and they would make nests in these gears. And yet, they didn't see this as a clock. They saw this as home. And we saw it as a clock with cockroaches in it. But my point is that the view, when the student, the tantra student, is able to see the teacher inseparable from, say, Manjushri, those two things still exist. So when you see the teacher spit, or you see the teacher has a messy house, or whatever the teacher's doing, the teacher's sick, the teacher, you know, the teacher has a human body. But that human body is inseparable from this other. So that's a very hard and a very high level view of the teacher. But I'm hoping that those three different levels that I just explained to you will help you in understanding that there's different ways to see. So at minimum, if you're coming to get refuge then from Geshe-la, or he's teaching you a mantra to say, then at that moment you would see him as inseparable from the Buddha, that you would see this lineage that he's carrying and that you are then receiving it from the Buddha, that you would see him as an emanation, a holder of all those same good qualities. You wouldn't have to necessarily hold that view all day long everywhere you went. But that's why there's this incredible room and this incredible ceremony leading up to something like refuge, because you've decided this is what I'm going to take refuge in. And last week when I talked about that man who fell off the mountain and then he wanted to die with his friend and he got crawled all the way back to the camp, and the Geshe-la said, oh, okay, so what he took refuge in was that wish not to die alone, and that's what got him off the mountain. His view, he didn't know if that man was still back at camp, right? His belief, his wish not to die alone is what got him to crawl with a broken leg off the side of a mountain for 4 days. So that's the same thing when you take refuge. It's that you want to get off the mountain. It's your view that will get you off the mountain. It's why you repeat. It's not like somebody's keeping score. Did you say the refuge prayer 3 times today? You've said you're going to say it 3 times today. It's not because somebody's checking. If you have a teacher, your teacher's not going to call you up and ask you, because it's your view, and your view will hopefully benefit if you're saying it with that certain same kind of feeling that man had when he wanted to get off the mountain. That's why one of the preliminary requirements is an understanding that you're on the mountain. Your legs are broken. It's that same thing. Refreshing your mind over and over again that's where you are and you want to get off, and why. And what's going to help you get off that mountain? What's going to help you get off? Well, primarily your view. And then there's all these things that help change your view. And so, again, then that's why the setting can be so kind of dramatic when you're taking refuge. It's to help get your head right, so that you can pull yourself down off the mountain. Okay, I've been chatting away. I think I covered most of my stuff. Any questions from that? Yeah.
Sorry about so many.
No.
if we have a relationship with our teacher over mm-hmm. many lifetimes, is it, I mean, I'm thinking, well, if I take a teacher in this lifetime, I might have had a relationship in the past.
Right.
So it's just continuing.
Right.
We don't know. If it's the beginning or the middle.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah. She wants you to say... How would you... Yeah.
How would you know if it's a teacher from a past lifetime?
Yeah. There's no, like, DNA test or anything, you know, but it's really tricky. I think the thing that we can... I think the thing we can convince ourselves of, though, but, I mean, it's a really good question, but I think the thing...
Hold it up to your mouth. Yeah.
But you know why? Because there's all these people at home watching, which makes me incredibly nervous.
If you're just doing it all through reason,
uh-huh.
How would you know?
Okay, well, I guess the part about the reason is you want to make reasonably sure that this person has these qualifications. But you would also, I guess, through reason and logic, know that nothing is completely out of the blue. Something has to be, it has to be based on something from before. So it doesn't, it's hard to know though if that connection that you have with that other person was definitely a student-teacher relationship. It could have been a parent-child relationship or siblings. It's really hard to know. But for sure we could say that there's some connection from something, because nothing comes from nothing. So that would, it would be really hard to know. One time when I was with Geshe-la, we were in the park feeding ducks, and you know, he's saying mantras in his mind as he's feeding the ducks, and I was asking which mantra to say, and then he said, "Just think, another lifetime." We were saying Medicine Buddha mantra. He said, "In next lifetime, we'll be teaching them what that means." You know, so I really liked that. I thought, oh, okay. And when my dog died, I was very upset. And this is the dog that Geshe-la was in the house when I had this dog, and he was there when she died. And he was saying, just make this really strong wish that when you reach Buddhahood, she'll be in your very first circle of disciples. I said, okay, I can do that. That's such a nice thing, you know. But what his point was is that you're going to meet this being again, different form, some other place. And just as you've helped her in this lifetime, you'll be helping her again in a hopefully a up one level. So it is really hard to say exactly what the relationship was like, but anything you want to add to that, Joanna? Yeah.
Is it possible for it to go the other way, that they help you in another life?
Oh, that the dog?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, especially if that was more than just a dog, you know. It's really hard to know. I know that one of the things that people always say about, you know, karma, and who was here in the karma class? Can anybody answer these questions? Oh, man. What'd you say?
Thinking about a lot of
stuff. Okay. Yeah, the karma class should help with some of these things, so chime in. But, you know, I think a lot of what they say about karma, too, is if you're curious about your past lives, then look at your current life. If you're interested in your future lives, then do something in this life, right? So, and everything doesn't ripen all at once. So what this lifetime, the situation in my lifetime, certain karmic seeds ripened so that I'm here and blah, 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 blah. And so the same thing with my relationships with people. You know, so I sometimes Geshe-la will kind of think about a certain relationship, and he'll say, "Well, it's very hard to know. It could have been the complete opposite. So now maybe you have kind of a frenemy. It could have been like somebody you were really, really close to before, and now this lifetime it's challenging. Or somebody that you're really close to this lifetime was somebody you know you were at war with last lifetime. So it's just really hard to say the way that the karma is going to ripen." But I think what's so helpful now that we are in this life where we even understand the word karma is trying to plant the seeds that we want. So on Friday, Geshe-la teaches this really, really difficult class. And you know, English is not his first language, and it's already an incredibly complicated topic. So even if we all spoke the same language, we would still be saying, "What?" And right, Amanda? So and then Geshe-la said, "I don't know what karma I created with you all to be teaching this in not in my language, you know. And that's when I thought about the ducks. I thought we were probably ducks last lifetime, and he was feeding us some bread, and now here we are, like, what? I was, yeah, getting a little closer.
I do have another question, though. Lama Yeshe, Osel is the reincarnation of Lama Yeshe. So everyone who took Lama Yeshe as his teacher, do they now see Osel as their teacher, and do they maintain that same relationship that they have with Lama Yeshe,
mm-hmm.
with Lama Osel?
So that'd be a really good question for Rabina when she's in town, because she was very close to Lama Yeshe. So that's a really good question. So definitely I can say they will maintain a very positive view. But because this is now a different personality and a different history and a different set of circumstances, and the person, so like Lama Zopa Rinpoche was Lama Yeshe's student and then helped, you know, so he's, but now he's in the position. So for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Lama Yeshe on this side of the picture, he died in the 60s, late 60s, 80s? 80s? Okay, 80s. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche helped find his reincarnation and helped educate him. So that would be an example where, even though he still has incredible respect for him and holding that view that this is his teacher, this is, he was 3 years old, right? So now he's in the position of filling him full of Dharma knowledge and ripening all of those seeds that are laying there. So, and I remember when Lama Wessel disrobed, Geshe-la said, this wouldn't bother Lama Zopa Rinpoche at all. He'd be able to hold his view. So, you know, that's where we go from small things that might disturb our mind to, like, nothing would disturb your mind of that view. And still, his challenge was to just help Lama Wessel with his education and, you know, all of that. But, you know, we're also, you know, we're now looking at, like, Mount Everest. You know, we're in the foothills, and there's plenty to do. What'd you say? No, but it's just working with our view. It's that's the challenge. You know, that's the challenge, and an important one. So that's why I'm really encouraging you to try seeing other beings as your mom throughout the week. And what does that do? You know, and I think I've told you all my stories about that and how I once practiced that, and it just completely blew my mind because it worked for those 10 minutes. And so nothing's ever quite met that since, but it you know, it has, it's very powerful practice, and it's the same thing of changing your view. Because again, with the two, as I mentioned last week, for those of you who weren't here, the two kind of camps we tend to fall into is, I want a teacher so they can fix me, and so or so that they can give me all this stuff, and that's the way we kind of view it. Or, I got this, you know, why do I need anybody when I can read all this stuff and listen to all these things, and, you know, all these people are on YouTube, and I can go get these, why do I need to have a teacher? So it's kind of one camp or the other that people fall into, or back and forth. And there is a balance in between that's completely different than that. Yeah. I think it's on.
Okay. I was just wondering how, like, do you overcome the obstacle of if someone is maybe very aggressive or mean or something along those lines, and it's a trait that your own mother would never have, so you almost don't even have a reference point. Can you continue to view them as your mother?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say if that was your teacher. I was like, don't pick that person. Well, so hopefully, yeah, so first of all, this is my rule of thumb for anything that is that you want to start with something that's guaranteed success. You want to have guaranteed success. So start with an easy person and then build up. And hopefully this isn't somebody you have to be around all the time, because it's much better, like, if it's in traffic and they can just come and go. But so you can also imagine, like, you know, most of us could imagine our mother or somebody we really love, if they lost their mind and grabbed a gun or waving it around, we would do anything to try to get that gun out of their hands and, you know, calm them down. We wouldn't be thinking of harming them, right? We would think, what in the world? How, you know, how could, you know what I'm talking about, right? The difference between if we saw a stranger doing that versus somebody we love, we would still be so worried about them. I remember once I was in, I think, Newark Airport, and somebody's mother, I don't know if she'd had a stroke or something, her car just came right through the glass window into the airport, and those of us, we were, you know, all, we didn't know what to think, you know, we were just standing there, and this woman who was her daughter came rushing in and was holding her mother and hugging her while the rest of us were trying to figure out, were we safe, what was going on, was this car going to blow up? And that's the big difference. So even though that's not what your mom would be like, if you can look at that person like if your mom had just lost her mind for a minute and gotten really angry and aggressive. But that's a big challenge too. So what I was, I'll repeat this story. I apologize for those who've heard it a million times. I was in Newark Airport again, different time.
This is the one you need to say. Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah, and I don't really like crowds. I'm not from that area, and it just was middle of summer, and it was really hot, and I was waiting for my mom to come out of this plane, and she must have been the last person on that plane, and, you know, people were bumping into me, and I was just like, ugh, and every, you know, I'm watching people come down the tunnel, and there comes one person, and I'd be like, it's not my mom, it's not my mom, ugh, it's not my mom. And then I thought, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be practicing something or other here instead of just getting agitated. What is it? So then as each person came out, I thought, not if it was my mom, but what if that was somebody in my family? You know when you, the people in your family, oh, that person's so chubby and cute, you know, rather than judging them. They just look adorable. If that was my uncle or my cousin or, you know, somebody I really love, every little thing about the way they're looking right now would just be food for my eyes. You know what I mean? So I was doing that, and it was working. It was like, oh, if that was my whoever, I would just love the way they're walking. I would love this. I would just, that would be so cute. And I just did that. Everything in that airport changed. It became the most, it just became this little heaven. I wasn't even, when my mom came out, it was the same as the person before her. It was just, I just was in such a good mood. Because every single person that came out of that plane felt like cute. They were just so adorable. You know, I just couldn't wait to see that person and that person and that person. And I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that at all. I haven't had something quite as powerful, but I get close to it. You know, like same thing with the cars. It was somebody who was driving like 30 on the highway, and people were like going all around her. And I turned and looked, and it was this woman who was freaking out. She was so scared, and she was just, you know, gripping that steering wheel. And I just, instead of being annoyed, it was like, oh my God, I hope she gets wherever she's going safely. And the other day I took this really, really long bike ride, and I was so wiped out, and I just walked my bike, and I had stopped and bought some water. And this woman comes down the sidewalk towards me, and she said, hi. And I thought I knew her. I went, hi. She said, are you okay? And I said, do I look that bad? And she said, no, I just want to make sure you haven't had an accident. Or I said, oh, no, I'm just exhausted. And she goes, okay, as long as you're going to get where you're going, okay. Nobody ever does this to me. You know, I'm usually the one doing something like that. I was like, it felt so amazing to have somebody that concerned about my well-being and notice. I just thought nobody was noticing. So it's that kind of that kind of feeling that you're just trying to generate when you can. So start with where you can, and then, you know, just try it a few minutes a day in a place like the grocery store or when you're driving. If it's going to be like in a work relationship where you have to work with this person constantly, take it in dribs and drabs till you can get there. Yeah. Okay. Any other comments or questions? I know I'm supposed. Oh yeah, the article. Did y'all read the article? Yay! I see a couple of heads going. No. Okay. Well, honesty is good. So you know where to get them now, right? There's four articles. They're free. They're on the information that Joanna handed to you. And you know, I'm here to answer questions that come up about them. So I think Lama Zopa Rinpoche wrote all of these. And you know, he's in the first article. He's really going over all of these qualities that the teacher has to have. And I was just talking to Geshe-la about this word devotion, because I was reading in the Berzin book that the the Tibetan word for devotion doesn't have such kind of blind faith connotations that our word or the way we're kind of used to thinking of it. He said, oh, that's not true. He said it does have this kind of blind devotion, but that's why you have to spend so much time picking the right person. I said, okay. So also the word guru, we have totally screwed up in our Western use of it, you know, guru guitars and guru coffee beans or, you know, just all kinds of stuff. It doesn't really mean guitars, by the way. it doesn't mean the things that did it say in this article? Did it give you a definition of a guru in this article? I don't think so. So, I mean, Geshe always says, you know, it means like spiritual friend. There's all kinds of ways that we can get into the etymology of the word. Guru is from Sanskrit. And this one thing I'm reading says, guru is from Sanskrit. It means heavy or weighty. A guru is someone who is weighty in the sense of having substantial presence, having charisma. Guru comes from the Sanskrit guna, which means good qualities, and ru comes from ruchi, which means collection. So the guru is someone who is heavy with good qualities. Then alternatively, gu comes from another word, which means secret or hidden, and ru comes from rupa, which means body and form. The Tibetan language, guru is translated as lama. And etymologically, la means unsurpassable. So you'll hear people say Geshe La, Chukyi La. The La is an honorific that's put on the end of words. Right here it also means unsurpassable and sublime, which indicate the method site of Dharma or Bodhicitta. And Ma means mother. In this case, it's the mother of all spiritual attainments, which is the wisdom side of Dharma. So Lama is one who has, quote, given birth internally to what is unsurpassable and sublime, and therefore exhibits the unified realization of both method and wisdom aspects of Dharma. So I want to try to, like, slide in some of the points I'm supposed to be making here, just not stories. All right, so let's... Wow, okay. Let's take a minute to do a little closing meditation. So get into a comfortable position. Check all your posture. Put all your awareness on your breathing for a minute and let all of the thoughts kind of settle down. And first, just think about examples of how we need a teacher to learn almost everything in our life. From the time we're born until we die. Think of the things that you needed to learn when you were very young. And think of some of the things that you've had to learn when you were a younger adult. And think of something that you've been learning more recently, and people who've been teaching you anything from how to use your cell phone to a class you might have taken. Trying to ground yourself in the conviction that teachers have and will continue to be extremely important in order to learn anything in our life. minute to think about a significant teacher that you've had. Could have been like the one I was describing in my high school. Somebody earlier or somebody more recent. Somebody who helped you significantly. And think of the kindness that they showed you in sharing their knowledge and the benefits you gained from their efforts and their good qualities. Generate a strong sense of appreciation and gratitude towards them. Think about the great importance of having people teach us Dharma, what to practice, what to avoid. How to bring us to full enlightenment. How we're entering into new territory. How we're trying to get down out of danger, out of prison, into new territory. We don't know the exact way out. We know people have gotten out, but we don't know the exact way out. And how we need someone to guide us along the way. And generate a strong conviction in the importance of a teacher who's qualified to lead you out of the prison that we're in. Take a moment to just contemplate how amazing it is that at this point in your life you're in a place where there's someone who has all of the qualifications, who is carrying teachings that have come down through this unbroken chain. Someone who can teach us mantras, just all the factors that had to come together in order for this to happen, for you to be here, for these teachers to be here. We're going to make a short dedication now while we're in a meditation. So think about all the effort that you expended in getting here, in contributing tonight, sharing ideas, thinking about these topics, meditating, contemplating how rare that is in all of North Carolina on this Monday night. how many people are thinking of their enlightenment, how many people are thinking of the ways they can be free and free others, how many people are thinking of how they can view all beings in a better light. This is huge. And that these actions of yours, your body coming here, your speech and your mind are not wasted. You have created incredible karmic seeds, and know that they will ripen. They will not be lost. And then as you dedicate them, you're deciding how you want them to ripen. You want them to ripen so the obstacles between you and your future enlightenment are gone. That you want them to ripen so that the people around you that you know are benefiting. You can imagine that you're adding these karmic seeds to the river of karmic seeds that others have created. Just as if you put a tablespoon of water into a big bowl of water. It joins that bowl. You can imagine all the karmic seeds that all the holy beings and all the Dharma teachers and all the people around you are creating. You add that to that river. So make a very strong wish of where you want your merit to ripen. And then when you're ready, just open your eyes. So the homework is to read now two articles, the first and the second. Bring in any questions. Continue to try the practice of seeing beings as your mother at least a couple times, at least once a day, someplace where you think it can, you'll have some success. And I need to cover next week. We're going to do a couple other meditations, but also we'll get into the seven-limb prayer a little bit and talk a little bit more about blessings and how this relates to the spiritual teacher. If there's things that you want to make sure we cover or questions I answer, please let me know so I can arrange it around that. Anything before we leave? Anybody have any other questions? Oh, do you know? Oh, okay. So are there specific meditations that I haven't?
Yeah.
Okay. And why don't you say what?
Yeah. Every time I do one of these modules, I like after the first class, I go straight home to the online learning center. You have to register and create like a user ID. But once you do that, you put in this key code, and then it basically opens up everything. And I spend the whole night when I get home, and I look through everything, and there's like an intro video.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have an iPod or an MP3 player, I download mine into my iTunes, and I put all the audio, all the meditations, and everything into my iPod. And I spend the whole 6 weeks pretty much listening to that.
Okay.
In comparison to coming here.
So great.
Very helpful for me.
How are we doing? In comparison.
Very good.
Okay.
Very good.
And this is the Kadampa Center website or the FPMT?
FPMT.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there a link to that from the Kadampa Center?
Not
really.
Well, kind of. Like, if you go to the very bottom of the homepage of the Kadampa Center, there's a link that will take you to the FPMT.
Okay.
And then from there you can...
Okay. Great. So, and tell me your name again.
Ashley.
Okay, so if anybody has questions about that, Ashley. And Ashley's going to be grading me at the end of this class, so... I'm just kidding. Yeah, see, some of these we will be doing on the last day is the practice day. We're going to be doing more meditations, but we're supposed to be doing a few more. Okay. Any other questions or things you want to make sure is covered? I mean, for me, the main thing I want you to take away, like I'm trying to infuse a little bit of like the lists and the things you need to know and the definitions, but I really think what's most important is that it makes sense, you know, that on a practical level, it makes sense, and particularly what it makes sense about is your view, that your view is the thing that you're working with, and you don't want to have a distorted view, like, okay, I'm supposed to see this person as... And I mean, we all have tons of examples of how people got into big time trouble because they didn't have common sense and street sense. They had that sense of urgency, right? And that's you want to mix it. You don't want to be just street smart and a wise ass, you know? And you don't want to just be like, sure, here. It's a combination. You want to mix them together. And the good thing about here is, you know, you've got other people to kind of check in with. So you're not going to just go off on your own. That's what I keep coming back to, is I want to make sure everybody feels comfortable with those things. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you.
See you all next week.